It's time again for the Scotty Johnny podcast with your host, Scotty Johnny himself, John Barnett, and the ego himself, Cheddar Talk, Aaron Flottam, talking Wisconsin sports, NFL through D3, college hockey, doesn't matter. Two mics, two crusty vets, two opinions, one based in reality and one based in what do you bet on Twitter, with music by Delete Great Cars and Trucks. Here's John and Aaron.
Welcome, welcome, one and all. Welcome in to the Scotty Johnny podcast. I am your not-so-humble host, Jonathan Barnett. And with me, as per usual, is Aaron Flottam.
Yeah, what's going on, man? Happy that the Packers pulled this one out last night so I wouldn't have to listen to Bears Nation on top of the division this week. So,
yeah, I know I downloaded the Waddle and Sylvie from today, but I didn't listen to that yet. It's fun to listen to. Waddle and Sylvie are good. You know, Tom Waddle wasn't the greatest Bears receiver of all time or anything, but he's an interesting guy, and he's smart in how he delivers his stuff. And every now and then, having him and Yurkovic on the same program is actually good radio. Yeah. But yeah, we both also listened to the Schadenfreude in Minnesota as well, where they did the Monday morning montage to The Sky is Falling by Hall & Oates.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. Go download that podcast, The Paul Allen Show, if you just want to, if you revel in Schadenfreude, that is where to go.
They almost had Schadenfreude with themselves this morning. They had to talk themselves out of it.
One of the best parts of that was Paul Allen, and he went back over during the show today too. Like after Cousins fumbles the ball and then doesn't really fall on it, and then clock is just ticking. He lost his mind. If you hear the call, he just goes like, Jefferson's running over there. We got Johnson's over on that side too, and Thalen's over here, and they snap the ball. It's like no setup. Yeah. just right.
He had another great call during the game too, and it was, I think it was their last gasp attempt, and it was like 3rd and 23, and Cousins almost got picked again, and it went to 4th down, and it was Cousins rolls back. Oh, he's under pressure. That was almost picked off, and now it's 4th down. Yeah, just the most disgusted.
It was rough. God, he was talking about it today. He's at least back and feeling a little better, but yeah, not great. But either way,
I hate the Vikings more than any other team. I hate their fans especially, but Paul Allen is a national treasure. And the way he carries his emotions on his sleeve when he calls games,
he should be the color guy, not the play-by-play in all reality. But one thing we'll say is thank you again to everybody as we're doing our intro here, and we'll get more into actual game talk just shortly here. But thank you for joining us again, all of our fans in America and across the globe, everyone in Ukraine and Belarus and Germany and we had Ireland and the UK and Australia and India now. We've had India now. And thank you for joining us. Wherever you are listening to us, please remember to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us. And remember also, you can follow the podcast itself at Scotty Johnny Pod. You can follow me at Not So Humble Host on Twitter. And Aaron, are you on the Twitter box at this point?
Yeah, in the Twitterverse? At Cheddar Talk, John. At Cheddar Talk. Perfect. I have been engaging in some hardcore Viking shaming and just ridiculous Bears fans.
They're fun.
Right now, the center of attention is James Jones, and I told him to mention a wide receiver that the Bears have had that's better than James Jones. And that James Jones has one Super Bowl ring and led the league in touchdowns 1 year, which is true, but he also never had more than 900 yards in a season, and I forgot that. So I'm arguing my way back out of that wet paper bag.
Allen Robinson's a better receiver.
But I mean, like, as far as the resume, but everyone wants to give me the Brandon Marshall bit, and it's like, no.
That's an argument, at least. It'd be interesting.
Was a better receiver. He's also a bigger disappointment.
Yeah, his talent level was a higher ceiling.
I did refrain myself from really shooting off at the mouth about halfway through the second half, because James Jones had picked on NFL Network that the Bears were going to lose 40-17, and it was looking like it was going to be 40-17. But thank you, Cowboys, for teaching me a lesson last week. I didn't put anything out there, because I was going to say, well, it looks like James Jones isn't that dumb after all, everybody, because this thing's getting wildly out of hand. And he's then good. That happened.
Yeah, he's very good on TV.
is.
But with that, we'll start getting into all our other talk. We'll start off, obviously, with Packers in our main event.
Starting things off with the main event.
All right, here we are in the main event. And of course, we're starting with Packers. Packers pull off a great 37-30 victory over the Saints this week in a Sunday night game that really lived up to the expectations, I guess, of what you were looking to get if you're the network, which is big name quarterbacks playing big time football, and both looked good. I mean, both did what you wanted them to do at that point. Breeze, notably this year, the story for them is average depth of target, which he's at like 4.5, which is lower than Brady was throwing. I mean, with the Patriots, he was at something like 7.2 or so. And, you know, arguably the Packers have been going with a much lower average depth of target this year too, and getting the ball out of Rodgers' hands faster. And it really has improved his play as well. I don't think talking about low depth of target is terrible. Generally speaking, I've been arguing for years Rodgers' depth of target is too deep.
Right.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Matt LaFleur agrees with me. You go deep every now and then. We, under McCarthy, we definitely were trying to make sure that we were really pushing that ball downfield and finding ways to get deep with some of our receivers. So,
And it was, and I mean, it's maddening to watch. And I was going to bring this up, but this is a good place to segue into it. Was watching him work. It was watching Breeze work last night was like death by fillet, you know, just carving, just like little tiny. This his best player right now is Alvin Kamara. He doesn't have Thomas. What's his name? That the receiver they
Emmanuel
just got
Sanders.
From the fourth.
Yeah, Emmanuel yeah. Sanders.
Emmanuel Sanders. Right. I mean, that just started working last night for the first time. I mean, then he's got Cook. You know, he's got his best players are underneath anyways, right? And so, and plus he's really accurate within 10 yards too. And he just carved up the Packers defense. And, you know, the Packers without a good rush up the middle, plus when Kirksey got hurt, you know, and just, I mean, just being able to move around it, it was really that way. And it was kind of maddening because it was like the Packers were at times scoring too fast, you know, and it was, you know, cause going into halftime, it was too, like just watching that, how long did that drive take that the Saints did just before the half? It felt like it took a calendar year, or at least a lunar year. And
four minutes, 28 seconds for that field goal. And then the touchdown was, well, they got the ball back quick. I'm trying to look at it says it was 6 seconds to Emmanuel Sanders, but that's, I don't know if they're getting that right. I'm just trying to look at the drive charts for what we had here.
Well, just before halftime, the Packers did get a kickoff. It was a knuckleball that got returned like 3 yards. But then the Packers came out after halftime. And do you remember what it was? It was like bomb, 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 three in a row. And now he connected on third down to Lazard for a long gain.
Yeah, big one there. And then like Lazard, a 1 yard run. Yeah, he had a big long catch there right then in that drive.
Lazard's going to go down with his longest touchdown or his longest catch not being a touchdown because he has a real knack of getting tackled at the 2 yard line. But anyway, and that was the thing too, is like, so the Packers came out and there was bomb, bomb, bomb. And I'm like, no, don't do this again. But they ended up getting the touchdown. Then the Saints went back to surgically like taking apart the Packers. But then just on the very next drive, then it was all of a sudden the Packers were doing a lot of short passes and like trying to chew up clock. And it was like, this is good. Like, cause we can do this, you know, with our running backs and everything else.
Yeah. Coming out of half, the Packers scored 2 minutes, 2 seconds on the drive that ended with the touchdown run by Aaron Jones with that long pass and everything in it. The Saints then had a field goal drive to tie it. And that one actually took 7 minutes, 3 seconds. I think that's the longest drive of the game. And that one ended in a field goal. So, that's impressive. 12 plays, but, 7 minutes, 3 seconds. Jeez.
No, it felt like the Saints offense was out on the field forever last night, especially when poor Ty Summers, like, I love the guy. I love his heart. man alive, like, just he was getting turned inside out on national television last night. Like, it was not good. And it was because he was out there forever and he's playing against Drew Brees, who's, you know, good at that stuff. But
and you wonder, I mean, how long they're going to keep leaving a linebacker on Kamara in the passing game. Because, I mean, Kamara was killing him in the passing game as much as anything. He had one giant run and then some other nice runs, and he was not bad at it. And he had one really long catch that should have been tackled like five different times, in which
that looked like
Tyler Lancaster chased him down and tackled him in the end zone. That is the most just out there, just pure hustle play that Lancaster chased him down the entire length of the field and caught him. I mean, he's not going full speed the whole way. I mean, Kamara is not going full speed.
No,
the whole
Kamara
way.
Actually stopped moving. And he's, like, right before
But Lancaster does not
tackled
give up.
Him into the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't stopping anything, but he did not quit. That's a motor on that guy. So good for him. I mean, didn't matter, but it's nice to see. Yeah, no, that's the things there, like the depth of target and how that worked. This is one of the big points I wrote down for today that really confused me. Watching the game, it wasn't every play, because every now and then King would come up and be in man, and they'd have the, you know, if he was on the single receiver side, he'd be up and he'd be press on the line. And then you'd see it, though, every so often there, you would look at it and it would just be everybody is like 7 to 10 yards deep off the ball. And that was just driving me crazy, because you know they're throwing short. They aren't trying to beat you deep. Drew Brees was not throwing deep. I mean, and for one thing, it's like because it works and that's how it is. But secondly, slightly tongue-in-cheek here, you know, Drew Brees has that like 11-step drop that he has to do so he can kind of see around the line. Mm-hmm. I mean, throwing 5 yards is like throwing 10 yards for normal people, because everyone else just does a 7-step drop. He's got a 9-plus-step drop at times.
No, so, and I mean, just like a simple 7-yard out is he's throwing the ball almost 25 yards across the field if it's on the short side of the field to the long side of the field. It's ridiculous.
He's 75 years old, so I don't know how he does it. Now, but that's the thing is, like, first off,
he's the same age we are, by the way.
Yeah, that's true.
The same age we are.
I remember watching him at Purdue at that time. So yeah,
I think he's technically younger than both of us, but actually,
whatever it is. Anyways. I'm better looking. I got that. So I'll just,
that's true.
I'll just
hold on to that birthmark on my face.
But yeah, no, I mean, just
sorry.
What does make me concerned is like, how come Oren Burks can't find his way onto the field more frequently in a game where his speed against Kamara would have been a much bigger tool? He's, for what I know, he's measurably faster than Ty Summers, because I don't think Ty Summers is anywhere approaching a 4.5 at this point, and I know that, you know, Oren Burks is one of the faster guys we have.
Ty Summers was doing his best Blake Martinez impersonation yesterday, minus the experience. I'll tell you that much. He was tackling anything that got near him. It was a problem.
Other than that one big one.
No.
Everybody missed him on
that
field,
except
for Lancaster. Except
for Jair Alexander, who didn't have a chance.
Jair's tackle, that was terrible. It was a terrible play. He jumped at him and threw a shoulder. He should have wrapped up. And four or five guys on that play should have wrapped up and put him on the ground, and none of them did.
As soon as it happened, too, I turned to Holly and I was like, remember that video that I showed you of Marshawn Lynch against the Saints in the playoffs, where he missed 13 tackles and there's only 11 people on one side, and Hasselbeck even got back into the play blocking 30 yards downfield. It took so long. I was like, that play right there looked a lot like the beast mode run. Like, it was just dumb. It was impressive that he broke that many tackles and he made those kind of moves. But even the beast mode one too, like, and even just Donald Driver's and
the
run,
49er one. Yeah.
Yeah. That one. There's some good parts, but what's lost in those is there's some really bad tackling in all three of those plays. Like, just like if anyone would have just broken down and just like wrapped up, like you said, Alexander supermanned him, completely missed. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the NFL today. People just kind of jump and they do that torpedo type thing, 'cause it looks good if you get the hit and knock him way over. But man, if you just wrapped up and made the tackle every play, it's boring, but it works.
Had Alexander been just like another inch higher too, he would have grazed off the top of the shoulder blade or the shoulder pad and smoked him in the head and gotten called for 15. So, and probably gotten ejected. So
yeah, there's no reason to leave your feet. But Okay, so defensive backs playing way off the receivers and just the poor tackling all around. The one other point I'm going to get on this defense, which, yeah, you give 30 points. I mean, they're not the team giving up the most points. They're not the highest scored on defense in this league or anything like that. But, you know, you gave up 30 points in a game where they were chasing you the whole way, it seemed. And the problem is I rarely see inventive pass rush from this team this year. Mm-hmm. And I think that Pettin has become very used to the idea that, you know, Za'Darius and Preston are going to get there at some right. point. And, you know, even Kingsley Keke got there a couple times the other day. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, so that was nice to get that, which was less than expected. I mean, he's good. I'm not trying to say we don't expect him to play well. I think he's a very good talent. And he's got ability, obviously. But the biggest problem was without Kenny Clark in there, it changes how our four-man rush works.
Yeah.
But we send the same four guys every play. We're like, all right, everybody, here we go. And it's going to be both Smiths and Dean Lowry and Lancaster. Surprise! You're like, no.
Right.
And we're running the number of three-man rushes that we had, too. It's like, what are we doing? I just wonder where the inventive nature of Pettin is, because he definitely had it 2 years ago.
You got to remember, though, John, too, though, like, my wife hates it when I say that, by the way. You got to remember, it's probably the most condescending thing anybody can say. She's right. Anyways, but John, you got to remember that. So the one thing that, so I think back to like the Giants teams that had Strahan. Osamora. Who else?
I'm forgetting his name.
Usi Omanora. And then.
Justin Tuck.
Guy who blew his fingers off.
Oh, yeah, Jason Pierre-Paul.
Jason Pierre-Paul. Or like we always wax nostalgic about the 96 Packers and how good that defensive line is. Like, you don't have to be inventive with a pass rush if you have certain things going on for you. Like,
right.
Kenny Clark up the middle with safety blanket Blake Martinez right behind him to pull any kind of short run up the middle, which – The one that can be easily replaced there is Blake Martinez. And I say Kirksey could probably do that, you know, like no big deal, clean up right behind him, you know, so mm-hmm. that's no big deal. That allows the Smiths to be on the outside. And then you can just move Dean Lowry wherever. I mean, is Dean Lowry been hurt too, by the way, or has he been out there?
He was out there yesterday quite a bit.
He was out there most of the time. I thought he was. I was just, it was so weird seeing some of the other people out there that I was just kind of taken back. The amount of injuries this year, just in general, is crazy, just trying to keep up. But, I thought I saw Dean most of the plays, but I was just figuring
it looked
out.
Like they were putting him to the weak side,
right
away from the tight end, you know, just to keep Lancaster more towards the run strong side and allow him to be more of a pass rush if needed.
Right. I mean, just Kenny Clark, you put him on the nose. He absorbs two people right off the bat. Lowry absorbs one to two, you know, one and a half. If Kenny Clark's out there, take out Kenny Clark. And now you've just got one-on-one-on-one-on-one, and the Smiths aren't allowed to run free on the outside, especially Za'Darius, because like they even showed him last night, they started running at him because mm-hmm. that's not his bit. His bit is go find somebody, not to be the, I mean,
especially if you're going to double the point of attack. If you double the point of attack, it especially makes it hard.
Right. So, yeah. So I mean, and that's Kenny, you hit it. Kenny Clark is the biggest missing piece. Like, everything runs around him. The reason why they had so much success last year was because of Kenny Clark. I mean, Aaron Donald out in LA, same way. I mean, and that's not hyperbole putting him, he's not the same category. Aaron Donald's his own thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, as far as just being a dominant force up the middle that makes everything else work on that defense. Once he goes, and now you just have a CC plus guy in the middle who just holds his own. Now all of a sudden, everybody else is starting to feel all the other effects of him not being there. More blockers. I mean, you put Kenny Clark up the middle, you might not be able to pull a guard because Kenny Clark's going to go run. When that guard goes to pull, he's going to be right on that guard's butt coming down the line with
follow
him.
The pull.
You know. Yeah. So it's stuff like that. Whereas if you put Joe Schmo up there in the middle, he's just going to tie up the center and you still have four other linemen for the other three linemen, you know? So,
yeah. And to move into the next point that we have, you mentioned the 96 Packers. I'm going to put this out here. The current team now is the highest scoring Packers team ever through 3 weeks. The last team to score as many as this, the Packers have scored 122 points so far in three games, whereas the 1996 team scored, I believe it was 111. So, of course, the last time that we scored 100-plus points in a season in the first three games, we went 13-3 and won a Super Bowl. Now, our defense was way better in 96 than this team is. That defense was insane how good they were. But the ability of this team to keep moving the ball, Aaron Jones having the ability to be out there and doing all the things he's doing, he's looking great. This game, I mean, we've kind of moved around. Like, it was Devontae Adams murdering them with help from MVS, followed by a week of Aaron Jones playing Superman, followed by this week was Alan Lazard beating people deep and getting behind people on a couple big passes, having a huge day, and then also the tight ends being very open. And Mercedes Lewis, just so they can now double the number of touchdowns Aaron Rodgers has thrown to a first-round draft pick, because they will bring that up whenever they can. It's one of the most worthless stats ever since, James Jones.
I was so happy to see that old man get into the end zone on what that was an incredible, athletic, really acrobatic kind of. I mean, he was literally just fighting gravity every step of the way on that way in there, and probably got away with a pass interference. But
I was gonna say,
there was a lot of missed calls in that game last night, man. That's like one of those. There was a lot of bad referee calls, but let's not even get into that one right now. But yeah, Mercedes looked great. And, and that's the thing is too, is like, the defense can't stack up to the 96 defense. This offense can stack up to the 96 offense though, position by position. I mean, if you include Devontae Adams, nobody's ever better than Andre Rison. And he was the greatest player ever to play the game. Except for tight end, though. Except for tight end. I mean, you would be hard pressed to position by position say that the 96 team was better. And even if you counted a wash at quarterback, just to save argument's sake, and Jones better than Dorsey Levens. And I mean, William Henderson, that's hard to compare because nobody has true fullbacks anymore.
You could say definitely the depth at running back is better because Edgar Bennett being there was very good, but maybe Jamal Williams over that. The receivers, I think, if you've got Ryan.
I mean, the Packers 96 team receivers weren't that good. You had Freeman, who was awesome. I mean, but
it was his rookie year that year, right?
Yeah, that was the broken arm year.
Yeah. That
was second here.
But tight end, Keith Jackson and Mark Tamura, that's not even close. offensive line on that 96 Packers was thoroughly impressive, too. Timmerman and this, Aaron Taylor at the guard spots. That's pretty –
Timmerman, Taylor, Frankie Vega Donuts. No, yeah. Frankie Vega Donuts was not on the Super Bowl. No, he was on the first Super Bowl team. He wasn't on the second one that lost to Denver, right?
I'm pretty sure he was on both.
The offensive line that we've got now, too, Aaron Rodgers has been sacked twice this year. That's it. And now a lot of that's the ball coming out earlier. I get that. But, Bakhtiari's back on another planet again. Like,
there was one this week, and part of that was Aaron rolled out. It was kind of a naked boot, and they prepped for it. They came off the edge, specifically looking there. They out-schemed it for that play. There wasn't anything you could do. You're not counting on a guy being there, and it ran badly for him in that play. But what is he going
to
do?
We'll get back to this play, but there was a lot of out-scheming last night. There was a lot of smart football last night. Holy smokes. Just like some of the quarterback play on quarterback play, because it's so quiet where they're playing, and just smart coaches too. Saints have smart coaches. But, and that one, you're right, exactly. It's 9 out of 10 times Aaron Rodgers gets out of that too, and either throws it away or makes a short run or, makes some wild throw downfield. But it was the offensive line's really good, and losing, I love Brian Bulaga, and who started at right tackle yesterday? Cause I didn't hear his name once.
Billy Turner started out there. It was great.
Turner was the one out at right tackle. Yeah. They've done such a good job. Like, and even Colin Cowherd called out the Packers for that one. He's like, you know why the Packers and the Patriots are so good every year, no matter who's playing quarterback or whatever. He's like, because of their offensive line. He's like, they just always have, like, they've decided it's somewhere in their organization that we're going to develop offensive linemen. And it's, they don't ever go out and, like, once in a while they'll use it. And he even said Billy Soldner and Bulaga were both first round draft picks. And he's like, besides that, who else did they have? But what's the one thing that Rodgers always has and Brady always had in Foxborough? Yeah. Time.
Yeah.
I mean,
and the thing is now too, that because the ball's coming out so much faster for Aaron right now, it really improves the ability of the offensive line to just say, look, if you can give me 3 seconds, ball's going to be out. And, right. And they've looked very good that way. They've been very stout out there keeping things going. The runs look pretty decent at this point. It looks great having this offense coming up here. And the thing that we've got coming up here this next week is the team that has given up the most points in the NFL. The Falcons at this point have given up 108. They're the most scored on team.
I hope this isn't the week that they turn it around.
That's new. You mentioned your wife. My wife says exactly that. She's like, well, now they're going to be mad. I'm like, well, they should have been mad this week. Beating the Bears for us. Because they definitely just did it again. The Falcons, they are a talented team, especially offensively. Not so much defensively, but offensively, they should be able to do way more. I'll grant you that Todd Gurley is a shadow of himself. And, you know, they don't have, you know, the period of time where they had Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman in the same backfield is done. But they're also going to be down a cornerback, I believe, at this point. Their top cornerback is now in COVID protocol. And so I don't believe he's going to be playing next week for the game with the Packers. Mm-hmm. Didn't play this week.
Do you remember when they used to call him Matty Ice?
Yeah. I still like him. I mean, like, he's not the reason they're, like, they're scoring at a pretty high clip at this point. I mean, seriously, like,
he has a real problem with going 3-and-out a lot in the fourth quarter, though. Holy smokes! Like,
he looked
bad in the fourth quarter of both of those games. Like, all it would take is basically just one play. All he had to make was one play in two straight weeks, and they would have won both games. And he could not do that.
Well, all the defense has to do is not implode. Is the other thing you could say there is, because I mean, that team had two games wrapped up. I mean, this week was like a complete opposite in terms of the emotional strain in watching our division rivals. I mean, the Lions managed to not Lions it this week and put the Vikings as the only winless team in the North. But I mean, like, the Bears were down 26-10 and the Vikings were up 24-12, I think, at one point. So, and it's like, and then you turn back around, you're like, oh, the Bears have the ball and they're trying to win. Oh, the Vikings are down by a point? What just happened here? What's crazy
about the Vikings game and their defensive stats is that it actually doesn't look nearly as bad. Plus, Jefferson had 181 yards catching and the best dance moves in the end zone ever. LSU is taking over the dance moves with the, what are they getting to, the grinder? Anyways,
LSU doesn't get to complain.
And then Cook had 175 yards. The only time in NFL history where two separate players have had over 175 yards on both and the team has lost. And the defense stats don't look bad. They got killed by 6 field goals.
Yeah.
6 field goals. Yeah. And they only gave up 2 touchdowns. But yeah, I mean, to that point, I mean, but at some point, you know, like, yeah, the defense gave up 3 touchdowns. An offense has to be able to do something to give their defense a breather, because when they're just getting killed, you can't just allow them, you can't just go do a 3-and-out and let the offense go back out on the field and stomp your defense again, because it progressively gets worse. Look what the Packers did to the Vikings week 1. Mm-hmm. If you don't stay on the field long enough for your defense to even get a breather and then just put them back out there against a team that just walked down the field on them again, they're just going to keep walking down the field on them. You have to be able to step up as an offense. And that's what the Packers have been able to do this year and did very well last year too. You know, it's like we were talking about during our pre-show, the feeling that you're starting to get, like, I still have post-traumatic stress disorder from the McCarthy area, that the second half would be more like the former, where it would be 3-and-out, 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 and then the other team would creep back into it and win it. Whereas with LaFleur, we're still kind of getting used to this whole, oh, the Packer offense oh, they're starting to mount to come back. Oh, the Packers are going to go out and lay out a 6-minute drive that may only get a field goal, but it's enough to let the defense get its breath. And then, you know, the defense goes out, gives up a touchdown, gets a little bit closer. And then the offense comes out and surgically takes apart the other defense for 7.5 minutes on the field, scores a touchdown. And it's like, oh, wow, here we go. And, you know, Matt LaFleur is 16-3 now as a head coach, you know. So.
Yeah, the Packers had 0-3 and outs last game. I mean, unless you count the 3-play touchdown drive. They didn't have a 3-and-out.
No,
so, I mean, like, that's what you're talking about is, like, the Packers don't put their defense in that sort of position. The one thing I'll say that did worry me this week coming into the Saints game, why I picked, and I was so close. I said 42-35 last week, and it was, you know, I mean, it's a 7-point game. It was right where I said it would be, but I was just slightly below, slightly above.
They almost scored 40 points again, though, which is crazy. Anyhow.
And here's the thing that worried me with the Saints and worries me some with the Falcons. Our defense would rather play with a lead. We're built to pass rush and you know, cover. And the longer that a team can continue to run the ball, especially a team with someone like Kamara, where you're like, if they can keep running and stay in it by running, that's going to be something that definitely doesn't play to our strengths and could come after us. That's where it's like, you know, you get the Vikings. What you want to do with the Vikings is you wanted to get ahead of them early because then they're going to stop running, which is the only thing they'll do that'll be successful.
Right.
And we're built to stop the other stuff. It's much like what the not the Falcons, but the Seahawks have been doing for years. They don't play well from behind defensively. But they get a lead enough, and then playing with a lead is just cake for them. The hope is that you can get ahead of Atlanta in this one. The teams have not been getting ahead of Atlanta. I was saying, I'm looking this up here now, I mean, Atlanta is the third highest scoring team in the NFC. Only the Packers and the Seahawks, two MVP candidates, are scoring more points this year right now than the Falcons. They have 90 points. I mean, like they're outscoring the Saints. They're outscoring Arizona, well, obviously Chicago, who has 74 points. I mean, but yeah, they've given up 108. They're the only team. No, they're two teams now in the entire NFC that have given up 100 points. It's Atlanta and Minnesota.
Right. Well, and to be honest, like you want to say that I'm almost okay with the Atlanta Falcons due to the last 2 weeks. And the Packers' first 2 weeks, well, all 3 weeks, actually, the Packers have been behind in every single game so far.
Yeah, briefly, yeah.
Early, they were only briefly in the Saints game here and then tied up again. They were down 7-3, right? Yeah, 7-3 right at the beginning and then tied up. We were
losing
one
at halftime this last night, too.
Oh, that's right. We were losing at halftime. Yeah, that's right. So we were losing badly to the Lions.
Yeah,
14-0. Yeah. And then the Vikings, that one was, I mean, we
7-3.
Really losing 7-3 and then 7-5.
7-5, then 7-8. And then it's like,
done. Yeah, and it was just, it was like that, it's the dreaded 2-point lead in hockey, you know, like, you know, just keep it close and then come roaring back. I mean, that's the way the Packers just get good as the game. It's like, especially with the offensive line, you can tell it too. They start weighing heavy on the defensive line as the game goes along. And even our defense gets kind of better as the game goes along too. Like you said, the same. You could tell it towards the end of the fourth quarter, to your point, that once the Saints were down 10, then all of a sudden now they have to get into we can't dink and dunk as much as we'd want to, because we don't have 7 minutes to go down the field. We got to get this done. So it's played more to the Packers' strengths. That's actually a very astute point, John. I didn't even think about that, because towards the very end of the game last night, the Saints actually had to go into that kind of offense. Otherwise they didn't do that at all.
Yeah, it was hard for them to get. I mean, they couldn't press the ball down the field. They could throw it short, and we just had to make the tackles at that point and keep things in front of them. So, yeah, I mean, that played towards your strength. Once we were up by 10, I was like, they're going to really have to push against the defense that we get to do what we want to do, which is just the Smiths get to just pass rush. They don't have to worry about reading a whole lot because they know they're going to throw, and that changes the way it's going to go. Packers are likely going to have to go into this week. Well, certainly going to have to go into this week without Kirksey. We still won't know what goes on with Clark. I mean, Clark did have a full pads practice last week before the game, just didn't get to play. Devontae
I didn't even catch it last night. Is Kirksey having more head problems again?
No, it's a shoulder. They're saying it's a shoulder that will not require surgery. Rob Domofsky is reporting this today that it will not require surgery, but it's going to be a couple weeks. Their hope, is that it will be miss him this week and then the bye week following. But I mean, we've got a bye week. Who knows?
In the case of Kirksey, though, like I would never be like, you know, oh thank God someone got injured. But like in his case, because I didn't catch the outcome of that one. I didn't look it up today either because I didn't think about it. But you don't want him to hurt his head. He's got he's got one concussion to go and he's done. Like,
yeah, and it was a shoulder, they said. So that's hopeful. Yeah. You can't lie about it, Aaron. Don't you giving me air quotes here, so but yeah, so no. Sad. Hopefully we'll get Kirksey back. We'll see what they do, at least having a week to prepare for what that'll look like. The one thing I will also say is I think that this plays more into the Packers' favor too. I mean, I think the Packers are the better team. The Falcons' defense doesn't in any way impress me, at least at this point so far. They have not been good. I'm trying to look at what their possible defensive through week two. Let's see where they were ranked. I'm just looking at DVOA because that's one of the more important ways of looking at this rather than just trying to look at their total yards and points. Atlanta 28th and Packers at 26th. So particularly not good at either of these things, but you know, that's kind of where we are is we're giving up points and yards and so are they, and we're doing it in bad ways that are definitely making it harder for us, but our offense looks better than theirs. And I watched
almost an entire game with them in it yesterday. Is there anyone on the Atlanta defense that I should know? Because I don't think I could tell you a single person who plays on their defense.
I don't know. Here's
the, okay, good. Right,
I'm trying to think off some of those checking. People. They had was it Keanu Neal? Was he was the safety they had? He's been all right. Trying to think if they had any injuries in that front four that were really impactful, but I don't think they were. Let's just see. In terms of this, too, like I'm looking at Atlanta 28th against the so they're like 28th against the pass. They're a little better against the run at 18. Packers are 30th against the run and 13th against the pass. And the thing is I don't think Atlanta has the sort of team that could take advantage of the fact that the Packers' weakness is running on them. I mean, they don't have a Dalvin Cook. They don't have a Kamara. They don't have, they don't have Kerryon Johnson or Adrian Peterson. They've got Gurley.
They got some equivalent to Adrian Peterson. They've got Gurley.
Yeah, Gurley, who's been hurt and he's fallen off though, and he's just not who he was. And Adrian Peterson is a shadow of who he used to be. If anybody else remembers who he was, he was great.
Adrian Peterson is doing much more of an Emmett Smith impersonation, where Gurley's doing much more of a Steven Jackson. Steven Alexander. Well, Steven Jackson, too, for that matter, impersonation. But yeah, both of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Steven Jackson was so good when he was good.
He was.
And so
is Oregon State.
Sean Alexander was too when he that 1800 yard year where he scored like 22 touchdowns for the Seahawks. He was crazy good.
Yeah.
You're right. Adrian Peterson, man. I was at the game when they didn't give him the handoff to break the record. It was in the Metrodome that last game of the year when they played, and they scored every touchdown in the opposite end zone in a game that was like 30-27. I didn't see a single one in front of us. Every time the quarter turned, the game would go the opposite direction. But yeah, no, Adrian Peterson was insanely good. But Adrian Peterson is gracefully going towards retirement, where Gurley's kind of.
We'll see how long it'll take him to get there. Yeah, looking at this, Atlanta right now ranked as the 12th best DVOA pass offense, but 28th in the run. Packers the 8th best pass offense and the best ranked rush offense. They're the number one DVOA overall team and landed on at 13. I just think our defense is slightly better than theirs at this point. If Kenny Clark is back, we're way better than their defense. And our offense is more multifaceted in that we could win by running more throwing. And we'll do whichever one works better because we're not beholden to the way we're going to win so much as giving ourselves multiple possibilities to get to the win, whether we're going to just lean on running or if we're going to get to the passing game or and stuff. So we're going to find better ways. I really believe in Matt LaFleur at this point. I think, I mean, the, right now I think it's a 7.5-point spread. I would say the Packers win this one something like, gosh, they might all score a bunch. The Packers might keep putting up scores just because they're trying to stay ahead. I'm going to go with 42 to like 27 is my thought, somewhere in that range.
Matt LaFleur, they threw up a graphic, and I don't remember who the second coach was because it just escapes my mind, but they were both coaches that had taken over. No, the second place coach was one of the first ever head coaches, like way back in the 30s and 40s. But first place overall for best start for a coach at their first head coaching job was Seifert out in San Francisco, who took over for Bill Walsh.
From Bill Walsh, yeah.
And he was and he was 18-2 to start.
Yeah.
Right? Matt LaFleur took over. Matt LaFleur took over a virtual dumpster fire with a potential situation with a HOF Hall of Fame, HOF, just ATM machine right there, HOF quarterback that could have been a real problem. And he has now gone 16-3, second best start ever for a head coach in a completely different scenario, not taking over maybe one of the greatest teams of all time. With some of the best players of all time for the generation. He's smart. The players love him. You can tell.
Yeah. They look like having fun. Yeah.
Petten's doing it. The defense has been suspect as we've just broken down for the last half hour, but Petten's doing the best with what he can with some key injuries and trying to move people around. And Jair Alexander, despite one torpedo attempt at a tackle last night, continues to be the real deal. He's getting up in the top five consideration for cornerbacks in the league. You don't hear about him during the game because whoever he's covering just doesn't catch the ball. Yeah. The offensive line looks good. The best left side in football right now is Bakhtiari, Jenkins, and Lindsley.
Yeah.
They're monsters.
Yeah.
That's three Pro Bowl, if not all pro players right there at any time. Maybe not Lindsley, but Jenkins definitely is. Bakhtiari has been
fantastic. Yeah, they've both been great. Those two are fantastic.
You put Big Bob on the outside of Bakhtiari. Yeah. Come on, man. Or Mercedes Lewis, one of the best blocking tight ends of all time.
Yeah, they're both doing great.
That's a hell of a push. I was disappointed the Packers didn't get one more field goal in to get over 40 again, because I thought for sure that they could go on a 40 plus point per game streak. But that said, I am going to pick the Packers are going to win 39-19. So I don't think it's going to even be close. And I think there's going to be two touchdowns of garbage time. So
this might be before
we get off the Packer game, I have one last thing to say.
So this might be a team that's close to giving up at this point too.
I mean, did you see their faces?
Yeah.
Do you remember after the Packers beat the Lions on that untimed Hail Mary to Richard Rodgers, the Kelvin Johnson fainting on the sidelines almost like he just fell down?
Yeah.
And the look on Matt Stafford's face.
Yeah.
Right? And then after that, Kelvin Johnson retired at the end of that season.
That's right.
I mean, just that's the look of the face on those Falcons players at the end of that Bears game. Like, are you? Why am I here? Why are we playing?
Yeah, you were going to say something else then.
Oh, I was just going to say. So, just before the game started, Nagler put out a somewhat controversial tweet about Taysom Hill. What?
Oh, yeah. Taysom.
And it was basically, I'm sick of hearing Packers fans talking about losing Taysom Hill. He's not great at any one position. He's okay at a lot of positions. And the fact that the Packers let him go shouldn't be a big deal. He's not a great quarterback. He's not a great running back. He's not a great wide receiver. He just can do everything. And it's a trick pony kind of deal.
Yeah.
That was kind of what the tweet said. And then Taysom Hill kind of was the disappointment of the game for the Saints yesterday too. Yeah, I mean,
it's not like he's, you know, Cordell Stewart or Antoine Randall-L. Like, those guys were very good at being received. They were really good receivers and okay quarterbacks. And Taysom Hill's a below-average quarterback, a below-average receiver, and a below-average running back.
Well, everybody says in that game against in the playoffs last year against the Vikings, like, did you see his arm when he threw that? He heaved a rainbow that barely went 45 yards. Yeah. Like, that's okay. Not a good quarterback throw.
No, he's not an NFL quarterback. And right. It's a weird gimmick thing people are oddly fixated on.
I'm kind of over it at this point, and especially in the game last night, because it was because he did torture the Vikings in the playoffs last year and a couple teams down the stretch. Like, they didn't know what to do with him. And then during last night's game, I noticed how much he was on the field versus other players and on offense. And it was like, and he wasn't involved. He's not a great blocker.
Oh no.
And then when it put in the spotlight and a point to perform, like, he fumbled it.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And I think it's the long con. We planted him there 2 years ago just for this day.
It was like the Packers went with Aaron Rodgers, so Favre would leave and eventually become the Vikings quarterback so they could have the worst playoff defeat of all time. He just did that. He did that to completely torpedo the Vikings franchise for 10 years, so which he basically did.
All right, we're going to move on a little bit here. We do have still – Brewers to talk about for another week.
Oh my Lord. Yeah.
Aaron, they're not beating the Dodgers, right?
I mean, what's that?
They're not beating the Dodgers, right?
Well,
they're 29-31. They're going to play the best team in the National League. That would be fantastic. If somehow they did it. Baseball's weird. I mean, like, it's a very short series. It's the National League wild card game. And I mean, they have to beat the Dodgers. They have not announced their starting pitcher yet. Is it Buehler is going to be pitching for the Dodgers? I mean, it's
Woodruff just pitched.
Yeah, just a couple 2 days ago.
So he's kind of short right now. But
and we're not going to see Burns for a bit, is my guess, because he got hurt the last time he was out there. Yeah. Ended up tweaking.
Help me out here. This is best of three, right? This round.
I believe this one is best of three. The first round is it. So whoever wins two. If we had Corbin Burns, I'd be like, who knows? But yeah, this team doesn't hit. I don't see them hitting the Dodgers. We might get shut out in back to back games and then be happy that we have t-shirts.
Or they might beat the Dodgers. You don't know. I mean,
Craig Counsell
is still a manager. We ain't hitting worth a poo, but Arcia's decided that he wants to be considered a major league shortstop and displace Urias to third base. So, I mean,
Urias, I'd rather have somebody with power at third base at some point, but yeah, you can't get rid of Urias. He's been playing very well.
Right. And so, I mean, there's been some flashes by some other players too. I mean, it's just one of those things. And, you know, it's, you know, you wonder if, like, with Yelich struggling and a couple other things, Kane not being there, the heart and soul of the team. You just kind of wonder if, you know, they're taking longer because they're only 60 games in. I mean, they're not even to the All-Star break as far as games right now. And Craig Counsell teams tend to get hot late, right? Like, who knows?
Well,
like,
somebody said at 60 games, the Nationals had lost 33 games last year. So they're like, don't tell me they can't get it. I was like, yeah, but they figured it out in a much longer season.
Longer season, you know, and yeah, you're exactly right. But I mean, there's enough people on the team left. Remember losing to the Dodgers in game 7 to get to the World Series. Woodruff will probably be able to pitch game 2. Squeak one out. I mean, how much are they constricting the lineups for the playoffs? Are they allowing
them to keep... That's a very specific question I won't have an answer for.
Okay, because, so, I mean, if they still have the big lineups, too, and not a playoff lineup, you know, who's to say Craig Counsell won't just send out 9 pitchers in a day? You know? So, and hope to God Woodruff can pitch 8 innings the next day. You know? So, I mean, I feel bad not knowing that. Football season started, though.
Like, the very specifics of how they've changed the rules for COVID has been odd. Actually, the fun point is if the Brewers somehow won in the first round, every game after that is going to be a Dodger Stadium for the National League. They're going to be bubbling the teams after the first round of the playoffs. This is the only one where there will be home games.
God. How great would that be, though? And then just win, keep winning at Dodger Stadium. Oh, my God. That would be great. I doubt it's going to happen. But
so here, I don't know if you know this here. So end of the year stats here and everything like that. Can you name for me who was the Brewers home run leader?
Brewers home run leader was probably Sogard. No.
Sogard, that's awesome. I love you for that answer. That's the best.
I was gonna say, how many did he hit down this and at the end there? Because I was gonna say, what did Yelich? I don't even know how many Yelich had.
Hira had 13.
Oh yeah, no, Hira had a whole bunch of home runs actually. Yeah, no, you say
who led the team in stolen bases? He had 4.
That is a rough number for a 60-game season.
Yeah, that pans out to like 12 in a full season.
Holy crap, that's a really low number. I don't even know who that could be.
Yelich.
Anybody.
It was Yelich.
Yeah. I was going to say it could be Yelich because Yelich is savvy on the base path. I was going to say you could tell me Braun, and I'd believe it because Braun is savvy on the base path. He's just not, you know.
We did not spend a lot of time.
Who's to say Braun doesn't have just a stupid postseason like
he does love playing the Dodgers. He's from that area. He does love playing the Dodgers. I'll give you one.
He's got a flair for the dramatic anyway, so we haven't really gotten a chance to see in the last couple years.
Yeah,
so.
he's not done that this year at all. Well, once or twice. He had a couple games.
Once or twice. Oh, yeah. He's always good for once in a while. You know, I remember when they beat – I was at the game when they beat the Marlins in 11. Sorry, 11? Yeah, 11 to win the Central for the first time. And that home run that he put off the center field scoreboard – about 5 stories up was unbelievable. And it was just so perfect. He is just the flair for the dramatic on that guy. Like I hope to God we're only going to have Euchre for a couple more years here. Come on guys. We got to do something. He's been here the whole time.
I'm going to give you one more weird one here. This is going to be great. Okay. Who is your 2020 Milwaukee Brewers batting leader? Batting average. Your batting
average?
Batting champ for the Brewers. Who had the best average? This is good.
Oh, boy.
You're wrong. It's Orlando Arcia.
I was just going to say, was it Arcia because he had enough multi-hit games that I heard about to actually make a difference? What was his average?
260. Arcia had a very good year, actually. I mean,
that's good for him, but when your leading batter is a 260, that's
yeah. But when you've got he's a great fielder who's batting 260. It's not that
your leading
batter should not be batting that. Arcia had a great year, and everybody else was just trash at batting this year.
If Arcia remains a top 2 defensive shortstop hitting 260 with also a flair for the dramatic, that's great. Put him in the 7th spot. We'll run with it. When that's your leading hitter, that's not good.
No, it's not.
this reminds me of some of my late 90s Brewers teams right there.
Yeah, so that's we'll keep our eyes on the Brewers. They have not announced their starter for the first game, as we said, but we'll have to see how this goes. Game 1, I believe, is Wednesday. So everybody get looking for that. It looks like, just 3-game series is what it would be, and game 3 if needed. So the Brewers would have to win 2. They will be playing all 3 games in L.A. So the dream...
If it means just winning 3 games, though...
The dream of the I-94 World Series is still up because the Twins win the Central. Brewers are in the playoffs. It can still happen.
And because the way the season's working out too is that because of how early Minnesota winter's coming, we've always teased about this anyways. Once it starts snowing in Minnesota, if they both were to somehow get to the World Series, the whole thing would probably be played at Miller Park. they're bubbled up.
They're gonna be in LA and San Diego, I think.
Oh.
Yeah. Or LA and LA. I think it might just be the 2 LA stadiums, whatever it is. All right. That's all we're going to have here for the main event. We'll just wrap up everything with just a couple little things here in what we lovingly call our last call.
Time to look around and get your bearings. It's time for the last call.
All right, Aaron, I don't normally do this, but we're going to put Badgers in the last call because you know, there's nothing much going on with the team. They're still waiting to get back there, you know, to the field, but that won't happen until October. Mm-hmm. The only news that we've gotten this week, slightly interesting sort of thing, is that it looks like John Dietzen is going to be back. He did not play last year. He had a bunch of injuries. It sounded like he'd retired. He apparently, though, after sitting out the 2019 season, he's a redshirt junior. He was a redshirt junior in 2018, sat out a year, is willing to come back, was planning on coming back in the spring, but then everything was canceled. You know, all the spring ball stuff was done. But he is back in practice and looking like he's going to play again. I mean, he's a guy who came in and played a lot. I believe he went to Kimberly, if I remember correctly, but I don't have the number of games here, but he's played a lot of games for this team. And it's good to see him back. It means he's feeling healthy. It means he's feeling good again. So that's nice. Mm-hmm. The other big story around the Badgers was the mystery surrounding Reggie Pearson this week and end of last week and all that. He put out something on Twitter about, you know, we're still working out, we're going to be back, and, you know, this isn't the end. And nobody knew if that meant he was leaving the program or if something had happened. His dad was putting out stuff saying, like, don't worry, we've got this, we're going to be okay. Well, this week it just said his dad, Reggie Pearson 4, on Twitter, is at Reggie Pearson 4, just says, for the record, Reggie Pearson 21. Is fine and feeling better than ever and will return to the field in due time. Thank you for all the concerns and love. God over everything, and then a heart. So he had some sort of, I don't know if he had COVID or what was going on. You never know, I guess, at this point. But he definitely was not on the field. It looks like he should be getting back. I'm seeing in the story I'm reading, Dietzen went to Seymour, home of the hamburger, Seymour High School.
Thanks for that.
Started 20 games at left guard and 12 at left tackle before injuries. So it looks like they'll both be back, which is always good for the Badgers at this point. The other wonderful piece of news is our own Joe Pavelski, Plover's own Joe Pavelski, Wisconsin's own Joe Pavelski, who played for Spash and then went on to play for the Badgers in a national championship team, has now become the all-time playoff goal scoring leader for among all U.S.-born players in the NHL.
Wow. I did not know that. By the way, out of all the sports whose championship is just being completely suffocated by the NFL and the return of college football, I think NHL is winning there. Like, the NBA is having a hard time even like making a dent anymore. Like, because once it became Miami and LA, like, I don't think anyone cared. NHL, cut the poor NHL. Nobody knows what's going on. As I saw last night during the game six of the Stanley Cup. And I'm like, oh
yeah,
we're six in already. Okay. I thought we were like game two. Okay.
Dallas and Tampa is not the hockey.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
Star sort of places that you wanted to put this, sort of matchup, but
they're hot spots, John. They're hot spots. Yeah. It's just a different kind of hot spot.
Yeah. Hot weather spots.
COVID hotspots too.
Oh, that too.
Yeah, there we go. But, that's stinky. Came around to it.
It's not like Wisconsin though. No. We're winning. Yeah. But anyhow, yeah. So congratulations, Joey P. Either way, there's Badgers on both teams. So some Badgers bringing a cup back this way. So that'll be interesting to see. I would like to see it because I would love to see the Stanley Cup come back to Central Wisconsin. That would be fantastic for us. But that's all I have. Do you have anything else to add, Aaron, before we let everyone go?
I had one thing, John, because you're from that area. Are Colby the Cheesemakers?
No. Colby, they're the Hornets. The high school team? We got the Paper Makers.
They don't have a cheese-related name at all?
No. Colby is the Hornets. We used to play them every now and then. There's is it Nakusa Paper Makers? And there's the Kimberly Paper Makers.
Yeah, and then the Hurley Midgets, Ashland Ordockers.
No, they're no longer the Midgets. They're like the North Stars.
Oh, that's right. We talked about that. Yeah, well, of course the Hodags until it's bad for a monster to eat white bulldogs.
Yeah.
That's not PC.
Go Hodags. State mythological animal.
I saw somebody out the other day with a Hodag sweatshirt on, and ended up going into a half-hour conversation. I was just only asking because I was in Monroe the other day, and they were the Cheesemakers.
Oh,
I didn't know that. I was like, that's, I mean, not in Wisconsin to have two towns with cheesemakers as their name, but I mean, it would be the state to have two cheesemakers, right? But oh. I was trying to remember what Colby was, and I know there's a Google machine, but who cares?
They're the Hornets.
I'm not into facts.
Kakana are the galloping ghosts, and they actually have a guy ride a horse across the field. I've played against Kakana and have coached against them. Wherever that horse is definitely going to relieve itself on the field at some point. They would at periods also have somebody, because they're a galloping ghost, in some sort of white sheet riding a horse. That is totally a clan guy. They're not putting a guy in a white on a horse anymore.
Until you just said that, I was just going to say they should consider something like that for the Washington football team out in D.C. Yeah. But not galloping ghosts. Now, thanks for ruining that one. But yeah. I'm still mad that the Washington Warriors, really, the Warriors. It's the most overused name in the history.
Oh, have they been official on that? I hadn't seen that.
No, I'm just saying, like, that was the lead in Canada when we talked like 3 weeks ago. I'm like, let's get a real name for Washington. But then again, John Schneider's our owner, and he's an idiot to no end. So,
Dan Snyder. Not John.
Who's John? That's a GM of the Seahawks.
Yeah.
He's brilliant.
Yeah,
sorry.
He's very good.
Yeah, he is.
All right, everybody. Thank you again for joining us. Go Cheesemakers, and also all
blessed
of your high schools.
Cheesemakers.
All of your high schools as well, wherever you went, unless you went to, you know, La Crosse Aquinas. But, you know, thank you again for joining us, everybody, this week. It's been another wonderful week, and hopefully you're coming back to us next week with another Packer victory. And, you know, who knows, maybe more Brewers playoff. We'll find out, I guess. Remember to subscribe, download, listen, rate, and review us so other people can help find this podcast. Remember to follow us at Scotty Johnny Pod on Twitter, as well as at Not So Humble Host and at Cheddar Talk. And remember, whether you're on the town or on the go or safe at home on the couch, it is always on Wisconsin.
Go Brewers!
This has been the Scotty Johnny Podcast. Remember to find the boys on Twitter at ScottyJohnny1 or online at ScottyJohnny.com. Thanks for listening, and on Wisconsin.